Hello, and welcome to a new interview from MinMax. MinMax is a Patreon about games, friends, and getting better. I'm Kyle Hilliard. I'm doing today's interview. Ben Hansen usually handles these, but I'm such a big Little Nightmares fan that I wanted to talk to Dave Mervick. Dave Mervick is the narrative director on both Little Nightmares 1 and 2, and we talk about inspirations, we talk about Playdead. I make a giant revelatory statement about the name of the game's protagonist that really throws Dave for a loop near the end. So stick around for that, and thanks for watching. Dave Mervick, welcome to MinMax. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, my pleasure.
So I guess I should set this up. I haven't beaten Little Nightmares 2 yet, so we can kind of confirm this will be spoiler free. I just got past the teacher. That's where I'm at, you know.
Ooh.
So she was very creepy. Congratulations on that. And so you're their narrative designer, right? And you were a narrative designer on Little Nightmares 1 and 2, right?
On both, yeah.
Great.
My job entailed mainly working on the lore in the background, though, since it's completely dialogue free. So it's an unusual narrative designer task on these games. But.
Well, after playing a lot of Little Nightmares 1 and a lot of Little Nightmares 2, my first question, are you okay? It's like, you know, like.
You mean like deep inside?
Just personally, emotionally, like.
No, of course not.
Of course.
Who is?
But this game provides you a good outlet to figure that out, I
suppose.
Yeah,
it's been a hard year, man.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, I guess you guys, when did Little Nightmares 2 development begin? Just like right after 1 wrapped up, right after the DLC was done?
I don't think it was right after. I mean, everyone needed to sleep a little bit and, you know, stop crying.
Yeah, get some more nightmare fuel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just go out in the world. That's all you need to do. But now, I mean, you know, like say I work on the lore a lot. That's kind of been ongoing since very early on in the first game's development. And so I just kind of keep following different threads that kind of take my fancy, you know, like something that you get hooked on because there's something maybe you're experiencing in real life. Like, you know, this has got something worth exploring here. So like I think at last count it was 150, 200 pages of stuff to delve into. So I think once we started thinking next game wise, then it was time to go back into all that stuff and see what it was that hooked us and what other people in the other teams were thinking about, you know, what they were interested in. But I don't know how long it's been now. What year is it again?
It's currently,
I think,
2021.
Someone from Bandai is probably better at telling us when we started all this, but maybe 3 years, 2-3 years, something.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds about right. Yeah, you mentioned the script and how many pages it was, and you also already mentioned that this is a game that does not have dialogue. What does a script for Little Nightmares look like? Does it just read like a novel?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. We don't have a script. It's like lore, you know. So there's lots of biographies, like characterographies, like what drives like the residents, you know, like the enemies in the game. What's going on? Where do they come from? You know, like give them a backstory, what it is, what's the id that drives those characters, and like, you know, all of the children come from, you know, they don't belong in this world. So it's like, where were they before? What kind of patterns shaped their life, and what was it that kind of brought them here? And because that informs the continuation of their journey once they come into Little Nightmares, because they. You know, that, like I say, they're here for a reason. There's something in their life before they arrived here that kind of made them a good fit for coming to Little Nightmares, if you like. It's probably about as much as I should say.
Well,
so, yeah, it's like...
I was going to ask, because, like, for me, I play through those games, and there's a narrative that you can track, and there's assumptions that you can make about the story, but it seems like it's very much, and, you know, you can answer this question, that it's very much more like... how it feels, you know, just like what you're supposed to be feeling as opposed to sort of, you know, dissecting the narrative. And my question is, you have a lot of notes about explicitly what the game is about. Do you think that stuff would ever be made public, or do you guys just want to keep that for yourselves to kind of, you know, direct you internally?
Again, I would say that's kind of up to Bandai. I mean, they own the IP, so they can kind of decide when is the right time to give people, you know, maybe something definitive. Because I mean, the whole thing with these games is you don't we didn't we never wanted to tell people too much. That's where they were born out of, was this kind of, you know, exhaustion almost of games that didn't give you time to think or play for yourself. You were just experiencing it. You know, the game was talking at you, and you kind of go, okay, so that's the story there then. And we were like, it shouldn't feel that way. You know, I wanna think for myself. I wanna like look around, and piece, you know, puzzle pieces together. So it was that was one of the founding pillars, really, the kind of the formed what Little Nightmares became. So yeah, there's probably stuff we would never say, but like, I mean, if you look at, I don't know if you've seen the digital comics that came out recently, plug, but that's like that, but that's a really nice example of giving people more, you know, outside of the games. This stuff you'll encounter when playing the main game, Little Nightmares 2, and this gives you like a little bit more like detail, a little bit of backstory about these really kind of seemingly inconsequential events that you kind of encounter in the main game. They've got the, you breathe life into them, and you just kind of expand the world in a way that feels natural and, you know, kind of engaging for people.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, I worked really hard on it, so I want to tell everyone everything, and I let them read it all, but it would destroy everything that worked so hard to create. So.
Yeah, no, understandable. So I wanted to go back a little bit because I know you worked on Little Nightmares 1. That game started with a different name. It was in development for a while. Can you, I don't know if you've ever, maybe you have, and I just missed it as a fan. I've always looked out for it, but why did the game go through so many name changes, right? Because it was Hunger for a while.
Yeah.
And then it didn't it change to a second name before it became Little Nightmares? Or am I missing
No, I
anything?
mean, no, it was Hunger, and then it was called a thousand different things when we were trying to find what it was going to be officially called. So I think we used the world's post-it note supply during that weekend, and we were just kind of, you know, some terrible things we thought of, and then some stuff that was like, ah, this feels close. And then yeah, Little Nightmares was the one that stuck, really, because like the game had grown by that point, but Hunger was the theme, and it remained the theme, you know. But it wasn't just about, it was never just about food, you know. It was about all the different kind of interpretations of hunger, and you know, the problem, you know, obviously I'm sure you realized the reason we had to change it. Because if people search for Hunger Game, they didn't get ours.
It's not the best SEO. It is one of those things when the name changed to Little Nightmares, just tracking it as someone who's interested in it. I was like, okay, that's a good title. But then after you play the game, you're like, oh, Hunger was actually a really good title too, now that you know sort of
Yeah,
what happens.
that was the heartbreaking thing about that, really, because we, you know, it started off as like my working title. I always like to give things a title that kind of, you know, hooks me in that. But then the more we worked with it, it was like, this is the title, isn't it? We can't lie about that. And then you also can't ignore the fact that Google is a part of
Yeah.
everything now, so people have to find it. And it was just, you're like, that, no, that can't be the reason we changed for this. But you can't exist in a bubble.
Yeah.
It's important stuff still.
Do you remember any of those bad names? Any of those post-its that immediately
All of
went to
them,
the
I wake
trash
up
can?
screaming about them. Probably got them all in a document somewhere, but that's definitely staying locked away.
That one you're not ready to share with the world, I guess.
I mean, we might use them for something else.
Oh yeah, true, true. You mentioned Bandai Namco owning the IP. This does not seem like a typical Bandai Namco game, but it seems to have been a success for them. You know, we wouldn't be talking about Little Nightmares 2 if Little Nightmares wasn't a hit. I mean, how did that relationship come about?
I mean, I wasn't there for that one. That was, you know, our CEO and other important people went over to make sure they did that job well. But I think it was like just serendipity, really, that it came at a time when Bandai Namco were looking to move into, you know, more of this kind of area, these kind of games. And we're very, very lucky that this game was right up their street. You know, they weren't looking to change it in that way. It wasn't like, yeah, this is a good generally good idea. We like the name, but we're going to, you know, do our own thing with it.
Yeah, we need some more anime characters in here.
Give Six like some like samurai swords and, you know, like quadruple jumps and such. It wasn't about that. I think that was the thing that was really exciting to everyone, is that they bought into it as it was. And obviously they had their own kind of take on it, like where we could really accentuate areas and stuff. So it was still kind of a collaboration, but yeah, it was one of those things that, yeah, it just took off at a really good time for both of us. So.
Yeah. For the broader series, I'm curious what kind of, and not even necessarily video games, but like books, movies, stuff like that. Like what are some specific inspirations for Little Nightmares for you?
For me, oh God, can you hear that? My laptop's just making noises at me.
No, I only hear you.
Oh God. Just me and my own personal hell then. Yeah, it's, I think for me personally, Roald Dahl was one I always came back to because I kind of missed that, you know, like the popular kids' books nowadays. I mean, I think they go a little bit dark still, but I always remember Roald Dahl felt very dark. You know, like bad things happen to kids in those books. And even though they were very fantastical in their own way, and not in a Little Nightmares way, you know, there were very kind of fantastical elements, but also it didn't always have a super happy ending. And there were consequences, you know, and that was something that I always looked back at. And there's another one, our art director kind of pointed me towards it. I'd never read a book called Momo before. It's by Michael Ende. I don't know if you know that one.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
The guy who wrote Neverending Story, he also wrote this book called Momo, which is a beautiful book, actually. I bought it for many people ever since. But that was another one that kind of something that had a real kind of heart, and quite a dark heart for the majority of that book. And so that kind of stuff informed my thinking. But I always say, you know, it depends who you talk to.
Mm.
Because everyone like just absorbs so much of like, whether it's cultural influences or just the world around you or just, you know, a small part of an image that you see that kind of sticks in your throat a little bit. And they just keep it, particularly our artists, they just have these folders just filled with like GIFs and images and stuff and just things with a texture that gives them a certain feeling. And for me, I'm probably a very tedious, massive library of movie references. So whenever I talk about anything, it's always in relation to a movie or a scene in a movie or a quote from a movie or whatever. So there's probably a million and one things that it's movies and music for me always. So if I'm writing a particular thing, then I'll have a particular kind of music on that just puts me in a certain place. And I think that's probably the thing that kind of connects us all, is it's about getting into that place, into that mindset. And how you get there is probably different for all of us, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and continuing down that track of inspirations and stuff, I mean, Play Dead is an obvious comparison. I mean, do you guys get tired of that comparison, or do you find it flattering? What do you think of it?
I would say probably both of those options at one time, because, yeah, it's super flattering because, again, speaking personally, I love both of those games, but they weren't something that we set out to mimic. I mean, I think we were underway with Little Nightmares 2 when Inside came out. Can't remember. My timeline is just one big blob.
It doesn't help that the last year is like just screwed everybody up.
Exactly. I know I was in bed. but no, I mean, and again, you know, at the pains of repeating myself, but one thing that I say it quite often, because this does come up, you can't help but, you know, see the similarities there. But the truism of this is that when we've seen, particularly with Limbo, what we saw in that gave us confidence, because you don't see that often, that people, you know, a studio has the courage of its convictions to that extent to go, we're doing this, we've got a vision. This isn't super trendy right now. You know, we're making these artistic decisions, these design decisions, because we believe that this is something that has value and we want to put out there. And when you see people do something like that, first of all, you're really, really kind of inspired. But then when it does well, you're like, that people do want this. You know, that our gut was kind of in tune there is that so much of what we talked about when we were thinking about hunger in the first instance came out of, why aren't games like this? Why aren't the games like this out there already? If we ever got the chance, this is what we would do. And then we got the chance and we did. And so companies like Playdead, it just gives you that little bit of, you know, bravery to trust your gut a bit more and run with what you think is right. And I've got to say, I'm really proud to work at a studio like ours. I've got to say, because I've worked in other places and there were successful companies, but like to be with people who really can follow their, you know, it sounds so pretentious, but their muse, you know, the people can really express themselves and the company wants them to do that. It's not about, no, back off, do it this way. You know, don't push yourself too far. It's the other way. They want us to push ourselves harder. So we think you can do better than this. Go back and do it again. And iteration is such a cornerstone of everything we do. It's a very long answer to your question, but
No, it makes a lot of sense. They opened the door for that sort of, I arguably, like, more artistic experience, and you guys were happy to have it open, it sounds like, you know?
Yeah, we just ran through it.
Yeah.
In one massive line.
right, yeah.
But you never know, because, you know, if we're lucky, then other people might look at what we've done and go, right, well, we've got an idea. We're gonna have a bash at it, because these people have, you know, these studios have done it now. It's only good, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny. I had never thought Roald Dahl, but the moment you said it, I'm like, that makes total sense. And I've actually found, just personally, like my daughter, who is 9 years old, who does not like creepy things, will not let me play Little Nightmares 2 without her. She wants to see what happens next. So I'm curious, like, is getting that T rating important? Do you kind of see the game as being in that sort of Roald Dahl bubble of, like, for children to a certain degree? Like, what do you think of that? Have you found that kids are interested in the game?
Yeah, I mean, they are. It's one of them. You kind of like, you're not allowed to play it, because there's so many of them that are probably a bit too young still and all that. But I remember as a kid myself, that's the stuff you're really interested in. So we've probably been a bit cruel, you know, is maybe putting it out of their grasp. But it's what, you know, I remember watching V when I was a kid, and that was really like that. I wasn't allowed, but me and my brother had the TV on. This is back in the 80s, a long time ago. We had the TV on super quiet because I wasn't allowed to watch V, but I had to.
And then you stared into the TV and you rotated the right control stick a little bit, right? Until everything
the whole world war.
Yeah.
But I think there's something lovely about that, though, that, like, because it's not so horrific that you're gonna destroy them forever. But it's just slightly naughty. I think that's it's a nice balance to try and strike.
Yeah. I mean, do you
have a guy? It was a guy when we had birthdays when I was very young. I think this is terrible now, but I mean, I think we were probably about 7 or 8 years old, and every kid's party in the area, this guy would come along with his projector and his reels, and he'd show clips of movies, but they were like really horror movies. Like, there's one that was like horror. It was Troma, like The Incredible Melting Man.
What?
There was like
showing
a really
this to children?
Gross clip of Jaws. There's so much, and we loved it. We loved this guy. He was a proper little, you know, he was a bit of a mischievous old man. Totally lovely. But and it'd be like that. Do you want to see the clip of the Melting Man? We're like, yeah. Looking back, it's like that. We, like I say, we were about 8, 9 years old. Like, that shouldn't have been happening.
So you're that guy now on a larger scale, right?
Yes, exactly.
That's
finally.
I mean, sort of on that topic of, you know, being creepy and scary, I mean, is there a line that you guys feel like you can't cross? Is there something that you sort of integrated in the game that you're like, you know what, this is too much, it has to go? Did you guys run into anything like that?
I mean, you do, don't you? It's all about taste and like what you're actually trying to achieve, and we're never really trying to... You can't lose something when you go too far, I think. You know, it's like, do you want to make Hostel? Well, no, because it doesn't. It's meaningless. And I don't think I'm not comparing this game to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I think there's something really, really effective in Texas Chainsaw Massacre that absolutely isn't present in a film like Hostel. Like, those two are, you know, to the casual observer, you go, ah, they're both disgusting movies. But I would disagree there, because there's a choices made that you know, that have a purpose. What am I trying to achieve here? So in our case, it's the same. Like, what are we doing this just for shock value? Do we achieve our goals anymore by showing this or by having this happen to this character? No, we don't. Well, then it's too far then. And obviously there's more practicalities, like, you know, yeah, we're going for a certain rating, so we can't do that even if we wanted to. I can't think of any specific stuff, but yeah, it's generally not like we're told to not include something. We just look at it and go, nah, come on, that's too far.
Yeah.
So gotcha. It's about your own instincts.
So the teacher's neck, that was, you guys were cool with that. That was good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just charming, really, isn't it?
I'm curious, just from, like, you know, when you're making a game, you play these sequences over and over and over. I mean, just using the teacher as an example, like, how do you know these things are scary after looking at them for a month? You know, like, what is it just your gut, or is it, you know, putting it in front of new people? How do you know that a game remains scary after so much time?
Yeah. I mean, there's always the risk that you can kind of get desensitized to it, but yeah, a lot of it is getting different people to play it a lot as well. You know, particularly if it's about getting a certain effect. And I don't know if you need to keep trying that effect, because you always know what you're going for. So it's about kind of calibrating that quite early on, I think. But yeah, you try it on different people. Like, how does this feel now? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that part could come a little bit earlier or a bit later, because it's about conducting those emotions, isn't it? You know, like, you want people to feel calm for a certain length of time, and then you hit them with it. And it's about tweaking. But also, yeah, it's about, you know, we've got some really talented people working on that stuff, on the mood of something. And I don't know if they ever kind of lose that feel. It can be hard. You do look at something for a long time, and that's when you do go to someone else and say, am I imagining things here, or does this feel, you know, less good or whatever?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's lost forever. It's just, you know, because there's, like I say, they're incredibly talented and have a real gift for getting that feel and for, you know, achieving what it is that they're envisioning.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this, what you just said, is kind of an answer to this question, but, like, you know, what is something that people don't appreciate about making a game like this in terms of difficulty? Like, what's on, you know, from the player perspective, looks like a very simple thing, but for you guys is excruciatingly difficult?
That's a tough question, because, like I say, I mean, I've always had quite a distance to the actual development, being, you know, in the law side of it. So I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that's really kind of painful that they go through. I mean, even just if you think, like, just the design of the characters, you probably think that people that talented, and they are, that they just, it just pops out of them, like, you know, fully formed. But the truth is that it can take thousands of sketches.
Mm-hmm.
And then even then the work isn't done. You take something from all of them and you get some hard feedback, because, you know, a lot of this stuff all comes out of you. It comes out of a place that's really kind of personal to you. And this is across the board. You know, the art team rightfully get a lot of praise here, but it's the same with everyone in every discipline. But it's all so personal to you, and you work so hard at it. And then you've got to have that painful feedback where, you know, you've got people judging what you've done and say, you need to go back and try it because you can do better, and what we're trying to achieve is this and all that. And you're like, all right, you know, and got to absorb that and then get the strength up again to kind of go at it again with some kind of passion. So I think just that, the creative process. And as I said, I'm so proud to work with the people I do, because they're all so creative and so talented, but it's not easy that. It's a lot of pain to get where we are, not just in terms of the hard work, but, like I say, the being judged and for the people doing the judging, yeah, because they've got to kind of stand by that as well. You know, they're like, they've got to know that their instincts are right, that you're kind of changing something someone's done, and that's the right call. Is a lot of it's why it all takes so long, isn't it? And why it's not a magic formula. You just gotta, that's why I always talk about the gut, and like really trust that what you think and what you feel is the right way to go, is the only really trust, I think.
Gotcha. This may be left field, but maybe you don't know the answer to it. Maybe you can just say, I don't know. But
that sounds interesting.
A while ago, it was announced that Henry Selick, the director of Coraline and Nightmare Before Christmas, was working on a Little Nightmares project, that he was going to do some kind of animated something. This was a few years ago now. Do you know what happened to that project? Is it still happening? Has it kind of fallen aside?
The honest answer is I have no idea. I am not a Hollywood person, probably, thankfully, I would say, because that sounds like a very high-pressure job. But that's the discussions that I was not a part of. So if there ever was anything to announce, that would be coming from Bandai Namco.
But, gotcha. Well, along that I think that sounds fascinating. I'd like to see Henry Selick's take on Little Nightmares. That sounds wild.
Yeah.
I wanted to focus in a little bit on I'm kind of like putting this, maybe this will be among our last questions here, kind of putting it near the end because it might be considered kind of spoilery for Little Nightmares too. But I wanted to focus in specifically on an early sequence where you're getting chased by the man with the burlap sack over his head with the shotgun.
The Hunter, yeah?
Yeah. You shoot that guy, you and Six. Can you talk about that sequence? Because that was the first moment. I mean, this game is just full of surprises, but that was the first moment that I was like wide-eyed, that I was like, okay, we're in a different Little Nightmares. This is like, you know, like up until this point, it feels like a very defensive game. You're hiding, you're sneaking around. That was an act of, it felt like an act of defensive aggression, like an offensive maneuver. And I just I was hoping you could talk about like your thought behind that whole sequence and what went into it, and what do you think it means for the larger narrative, you know?
I wasn't part of that creating that sequence, so I won't presume to kind of talk the thought behind it. I can tell you what I think of it though.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I think it changes it up. I think it's really important early on to let people know that they don't know what to expect. And I think that does hold true for the way the game plays out. Because everyone knew that, you know, it was a big joke when we announced it at Gamescom, and that you could hit people across the head with a soup ladle and all this. But, you know, because, I mean, the truth in the game is, yeah, you can wheel things and you can hit out, but it doesn't really make you an empowered figure.
No.
So that cat was out of the bag, really, that you could wheel stuff, but people didn't know this was coming, and I think that's really cool because, like I say, it kind of establishes that idea in your head that I don't know what's coming. I thought I knew Little Nightmares, but this, yeah, like I say, it's felt a little bit out of character, didn't it? In a good way.
But like, I would agree with that,
they
yeah.
were back against the wall. And that feeling of like, well, this is the only thing to do now, or we die. I think, yeah, all right, you got rid of him. But I wouldn't say I came out of it feeling like Rambo.
No, I mean, I think it was effective in that way of like, you're running, you know, you got to get out of there somehow. You come into that room and it's on the wall and you're like, well, certainly not. I'm not going to grab that, right? Like, that can't be it. And then it was, then you do. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I really love that sequence, to be clear. So that's why I wanted to hear more about it in depth.
I think that there's something of a cathartic moment in that as well. Like, I mean, you see there's so much detritus from the killing and and flaying of other animals, you know, all the skins everywhere and the snares and rope traps and everything. It was just horrible. And like what they were made into and what's coming your way. I think it felt the real catharsis in, yeah, that cliche of the hunter getting it.
Yeah.
I felt good about that because I hate hunters. Also.
Yeah.
Trophy hunters.
Thank you for diving into that. I appreciate it. This is maybe my last question. It's just kind of one of the sort of many little questions I had written off to the side here. The protagonist's name is Mono. And my question initially was, is that a Shadow of the Colossus reference? Because that's the, you know, the princess, for lack of a better term, her name is Mono. But then you mentioned the book Momo. And I'm wondering, is that what that is from? Or does Mono... Is that just a cool name?
No, I love Shadow of the Colossus. Was that the princess's name?
Am I misremembering now? That could be the case.
I don't know.
So I guess the short answer is no, if we're not even sure if that's her name.
No, I mean, I would never do anything like that, you see. I'm really kind of really strict with myself. Like, I can't do such, direct homages.
Gotcha.
But I'm just looking now.
Yeah, I looked on my phone. It is Mono is her name. I don't know if it's ever spoken in the game.
Oh, yeah, it is Mono. Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
That's terrible.
Do we have to issue a little letters to patch?
You heard it here first. My actual, this is my first reaction video. Yeah, no, it absolutely isn't. That's terrible, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I got you, man. I push you up against the wall. Honestly, you're gonna have to pull the shotgun down.
I'm on record many times, in fact. That is one of my all-time favorite games, so it's no one's gonna believe me, are they? When that's not a real reaction.
But it was just fun. Just for me as a player, I was like, oh, Mono, I wonder if they're calling out Shadow of the Colossus. And then you can hold hands, which is a very much an Ico thing. And I was like, oh, these are some a Team Ico fans. These are compliments, by the way. You don't have to put your hands over your face. Those are amazing games.
Oh, I know, but that absolutely not. I absolutely didn't do that. My God. You've thrown me. I never get thrown. Talking to people, I am thrown.
I'm so sorry, Dave.
I mean, because I played that game so many times, I never knew her name.
I don't think they say it in game. I think it was in the booklet on PlayStation 2. I think maybe that's...
I never read the booklets. I haven't read the booklet since Master System days when I had to write down the password in the back.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to this is how we wrap up our interview, is I've just shattered your world.
Can we do a day 2 patch?
There we go. Patch notes renamed the protagonist.
Mando. No, that's being used as well, isn't
it? Yep, that one's taken as well. What about like Nathan Drake? Is that one available?
No one would believe that. it's too cool, that name.
Well,
do you know, there was one time I was talking to someone about like the influencers, and I started making a joke about it being a Pac-Man ripoff, you know, because of Bandai Namco, and then I was like, hold on.
you gotta be careful when you say that stuff. We take those kind of things at face value.
Creature devouring monsters in a... No.
Yeah. No, that's instantly go to Wikipedia and update something and be like, you know, this game's a Pac-Man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dave. It was great to talk to you. I'm a big fan of both games. I'm excited to finish the second one. So
It
was a mistake to show it to my daughter because now I have to play while like she's awake. I can't like stay up late and play the game. So it's slowed me down a lot, but it's been a lot of fun playing with her. So thanks for making the game.
Yeah, thanks for enjoying it.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of MinMax Interviews. There are more like this if you want to check out our YouTube playlist or support MinMax on Patreon for more like this in the future.